and welcome to another exciting edition of 4Panel, your weekly guide to the weird and wild world of comics. I'm Andrew, and I am joined by my co-host, Mick.
Hello!
And not Rob, for reasons.
Reasons which I'm sure... Maybe there's never actually been a Rob. Maybe he's just been an illusion.
Oh, I see what you did.
Hey?
Mysterious.
Mysterious or?
Oh, Mysterio. So if you couldn't tell by our very subtle hints, today is our Far From Home big old spoiler review.
That's right. We're assuming that because, you know, we aim to appeal to a big comic book audience that by now... you've probably been out and seen Far From Home rather than gone, do you know what? I think I'll go see Midsommar this week instead.
Yeah, from what I hear, that's maybe not... You're losing out on that choice.
Yeah. Yeah. If that is the sort of thinking that you're going down, first of all, stop listening now because we're going to do a big spoiler-filled review. And secondly, remember to come back later after you've seen the film, so that you can enjoy our spoiler-filled review. And thirdly, don't go see Midsommar.
Well, thank goodness we've saved all the people who tune into an episode titled Spider-Man Far From Home Spoiler Review, get about 3 minutes in and think, wait a minute, this is a review full of spoilers for Far From Home.
I can testify to the fact that even after... you put a sign up saying, please do not flush, insert inappropriate object here, down the toilet, people will still flush things down the toilet. You can make people read, you can't make them understand.
Also, I make fun. I went to Wagamama's after watching this film and had a conversation with one of the staff and telling, hey, so what's a tea-stained egg? Well... it's an egg. It's been stained with tea. And the following conversation. Well, this tastes a lot like egg and a bit of tea.
The other thing is you can stain it with other things and have different flavours.
Yeah, but you have to come back after dark for that service. Anyway,
we're digressing.
Enough of my adventures in foreign cuisine.
I think I've just figured out what Rob's point is on the show. No, right. That can't be right.
No,
it can't be Rob that keeps us... no.
Unless it's like a two wrongs make a right scenario.
What, you mean he diverts us so far off subject that we actually come all the way back round again?
Exactly.
Right.
Anyway, what did you think of this film, Mick?
I think that there's some executives at Sony who have spent the last sort of 2-3 years going, oh, that's how you make a Spider-Man movie. Because both of the Marvel efforts so far, and indeed his little cameos in the Avengers and Captain America films, have been a lot of fun. And that's what Spider-Man should be, I think.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting that they've done these films where they've actually kind of gone quite far off script for what a Spider-Man story usually is, but it still feels like it's Peter Parker.
Yeah, yeah. It's all the stuff I remember enjoying as a kid reading Spider-Man comics, all the one-liners as he's fighting villains and quite cheesy villains, to be fair. But cracking the one-liners, doing all that, but still actually having time to have, like, you know, a life outside of being Spider-Man and doing all that wrestling with the great responsibility and the juggling, trying to get money together and stuff like that. But without it being miserable, which is what I think the Sony franchises, both of them, kind of fell foul of. They went too much for the teen angst element of Peter Parker.
Oh, yeah, and especially... not enough for the... especially the Amazing Spider-Man ones.
Yeah. let's not revel in the fact that I dress in this brightly coloured spandex and swing through the city of New York fighting crime with all these powers I've got. Let's just go, oh, how terrible's my life?
Yeah, just sadly doing skateboard tricks in the rain.
Andrew Garfield was much better as a pig slave in Doctor Who.
I can't argue with that. Anyway, yeah, I enjoyed the film. I thought it was a lot of fun. I will say, though, I feel like it's kind of not my favourite Marvel film. Like, I think it's probably fairly sort of middle of the rankings-ish.
Yeah, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Oh, yeah, no, like, certainly I want the key point to be, this is a good movie and I had fun watching it.
Yeah, because I think that's what you needed. After all the pomp and circumstance of the two-part Infinity War, I think you needed this kind of, oh, comic books are just fun, you know, type of movie, just for everybody to catch their breath and get ready for the next phase of Marvel movies.
Yeah, I think so. It's just, I feel like in places this did feel, for me, just a bit too much. Yes, this is a comic book movie. Let us get the comic book movie checklist out.
Do we have an over-the-top villain?
Yes. Does he have a big thingy-majig that will destroy a city? Check.
Is there the possibility that he may try and deceive us? Tick. Wait, is there a girl?
Whoa.
Is there a girl?
I mean, tick, obviously.
Big tick.
But hold on a sec.
Hold on a sec.
Are you trying to say that Mysterio, Master of Illusion, might not be the up-and-up hero that the trailers made him out to be?
Well, if this was Cinema Eclectica, I'd say I'd leave that for the audience to decide, because they do the spoiler-free reviews of superhero movies. But this is Four Panel.
Heck yeah. With a punk rock podcast of the Geek Show.
Because I must admit, I mean, Mysterio's not a villain that I'm overly familiar with. As we'll cover in the review section, I've been getting more familiar with him in preparation for tonight's episode. But one thing I will say about this Mysterio is he's a lot more grounded than the ones that I've seen in the comics, in that he's a much more realistic, believable Mysterio man who dresses in a goldfish bowl than the ones I've read in my comic book that will be reviewed later.
Yeah, I think they definitely. I think Jake Gyllenhaal does a good performance, and I think they do a great job of making him kind of. Is he making it so you get like the really outlandish green and gold flying around with mist and lasers Mysterio that you'd see in the comics, but then also tying that into kind of a more grounded version as well?
Yeah, because I think one thing that I've felt with the comic book version that I've read, and I know there's been several Mysterios. Is it Mysterios? Mysterii?
Mysteries O?
Actually, Spider-Man quite often refers to him as Misty. Let's go with Misties. There's been quite a number of Misties in the comics over the years.
Oh. Hey, Mick.
Yeah.
Do you think to get Jake Gyllenhaal on board, Kevin Feige went up to him and kind of got down on his knees and says, hey Jake, please play Misty for me?
If this film had been directed by Clint Eastwood, I'd have thought maybe he did.
That's it. That's all I had.
Yeah. Rob would have found that hilarious.
He would have.
You're missing him now, aren't you?
I am. That's what he was here for. To make me feel good about myself.
So, yeah, so we've got a Mysterio that is a lot more realistic, because in the comics he's portrayed as being a former stuntman who's also a special effects wizard, which apparently means he's a fully qualified robotics engineer and physicist and chemist and all. And that makes no sense in the comics. I mean, it does, because comics.
Yeah, it is. He is like a lot of kind of Silver and Bonji villains, where it's like, I have a job vaguely related to some kind of gimmick, therefore I'm also like one of the smartest men in the world and can build all these elaborate death traps.
Yeah. I mean, one of the constant themes that I've noticed with Mysterio stories is that Mysterio just wants to be rich and famous. Well, if he was as skilled and talented in his field as he is, he'd be a one-man Marvel Studios.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't need Marvel Studios to hire you, Quentin. You can make your own.
Yeah, just make a cinematic universe. And if that stops making you money, invent a new one.
Oh, okay, yeah. One thing, you know, I think I might say it now before we get into the spoilers.
Yeah.
Something I maybe didn't like that much about Mysterio is like the hand wave a lot of his villainy by just saying, oh, he's unstable. And I feel like that just feels a bit cheap when they kind of.
Yeah.
They build him up to be kind of a hero and then he does his big betrayal. And then it just seems like a very easy excuse to go, oh, well, this is just why he's evil now.
Yeah. But I do think that the explanation behind his motivation is good.
Yeah, I like.
I also like the fact that you find yourself wondering if the story that he spun to Nick Fury has any truth in it or not.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a bit of it's cool to see kind of the hero guy he could have been.
Yeah.
Anyway, shall we get into the spoilers?
Yeah, let's.
So I think we need to talk about just the very first scene of the film, which is it's 8 months after the end of Endgame. Everyone who got blipped away is now back trying to get on with their lives. Everyone, basically all the school kids who disappeared, they are now back finishing their current year. And we get all this handy recap in the manner of an in memoriam video by the school TV channel.
Yeah, the school's got its own TV station, hasn't it? Which I think is showing a certain amount of entitlement. That
see, you would, but then also the video they've got is the most fantastically low budget thing.
True, true.
Like it's all badly cropped and blurry images of like Captain America, Iron Man, Black Widow, and Vision. There's a bit where like they've got some candles and just the Getty Images logo is very obviously visible.
Yeah. But I think, you know, it gives it a certain touch of realism that is the kind of amateurish thing you get from a, you know, clearly a school that's been given more gear than it could possibly hope to learn how to use. But yeah, so there is that nice little intro piece. I like in this film the fact that Nick Fury is clearly bitter about losing 5 years.
Oh yeah, well, because like he said, he's gone from knowing everything to knowing nothing.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if he just watched the video. Anyway, then we get into...
Well, yeah. Actually, yeah, because 5 years have passed, so he could get all the Blu-rays.
All the movies.
Yeah. Catch up on what had happened.
Do you think that was a secret all along? That's just got a tiny DVD player behind his eye patch.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. Anything could happen.
That's... I love that. That's definitely officially part of the canon now. So, anyway, then we get into kind of the... What I'm not sure if it's exactly half, but I like to think of it as the first half of the movie, which is very much kind of the story you'll have seen advertised in the trailers.
Yes.
So Peter and his class, they're going away on a school trip across Europe. Nick Fury wants Pete to help him out because he's been approached by a man called Mysterio, who claims to be from another dimension. And he's helped defeating the four elementals before they destroy Earth. But Pete, he just wants to enjoy his vacation and tell MJ that he's got a bit of a thing for her.
Yeah, bless. And he's got a plan.
He does. He's got a very elaborate plan involving like Black Dahlia necklaces and the Eiffel Tower.
That's right. You know, your average sort of New York teenager's plan. Not, of course, to be confused with Ned's plan.
Which is just meet single women.
Yeah. be eligible bachelors on foreign soil.
Except that plan goes out the window when he ends up getting sat next to Betty Brandt, the school reporter.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, see, I like that they actually made that reference to the comics, because in the comics, Ned and Betty, they both worked at the Daily Bugle, and I think they were actually married for a bit.
Yes, I think they were, because I've read a comic. One of the collection that I read was set at a time where they were having some troubles, apparently, and Betty was staying at MJ's.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, you'll be happy to know, though, Mick, those troubles got resolved.
Well, I am glad to hear that. I am very glad to hear that.
You might be less glad when you learn that those troubles were resolved because Ned got famed for being the Hobgoblin and was murdered.
Yeah.
This will probably not be a plot point in an upcoming Spider-Man film.
Unless it goes really dark with Phase 4.
Yeah, unless they take a bit of a turn. Oh, another little comics reference I wanted to point out was the Elementals themselves.
Right.
So these are just kind of, in the film, they're kind of big, generic monsters made out of different elements. And the Elementals themselves are just like a super obscure group of Marvel villains, which are kind of not connected to these ones, because these ones are very heavily based on other Spider-Man foes. So you've got like the big Earth one, who is obviously meant to be Sandman, the big Fire one, who is Molten Man, and I think the most obvious one is the water monster that Spider-Man ends up fighting in Venice. That one is based on the Spider-Man villain Hydro-Man. And Flash Thompson even makes a reference to his comics origin when he has a line about how BuzzFeed is saying he's a man named Morris Bench who fell into an experimental water generator, which is who he is in the comics.
Right.
Then there's also...
You see, this show is educational as well.
Exactly. We're like the BBC.
We inform, we educate, and we entertain, occasionally.
Anyway, then the fourth one, I thought was a nice reference. You don't really see it, but it's described as being like a cyclone with a face. The cyclone being another one of Spider-Man's villains who can make whirlwinds.
It's kind of handy, all these sort of super Spider-Man villains turning up in a Spider-Man movie, isn't it?
It is indeed. But I like that because Cyclone is French, and I think Spider-Man's fought him kind of on occasions where he's been to Europe. So it's kind of a nice little nod to this sort of globe-spanning film. So yeah, first half of the film, it's a lot of fun. It's sort of like a almost American Pie-esque vacation movie. There's plenty of gags and misunderstandings. Some I would say work better than others.
Yeah.
Then we also get the important plot point that Pete finds out that Tony Stark, before he died, left him not only his glasses, but also the AI linked to them, which controls, I think it's supposed to control like all of Stark Industries, but for the purposes of this film, it controls like his drone network, and it goes by Edith.
Yeah. Of course, what you've got to assume is that, you know, when Stark decided to leave the glasses to Spider-Man, he probably did it in the same way that he did the suit in Homecoming, in that he probably had some training wheels protocols attached to it. I'll just leave him the drones to start with.
Yeah, there's no way Pete could mess up having the drones.
Is there? No, I trust him implicitly to do the right thing with this.
Pete, of course, uses the drones to accidentally almost kill one of his classmates. So, yeah. So this kind of half of the movie has its big climax in Prague, which is where Spider-Man has to fight Molten Man. So this is probably my favourite joke in the film. As part of this, Spider-Man gets a new costume, the kind of black stealth suit that you see in the trailers, with the idea being that, you know, if people see Spider-Man swinging around Prague at the same time Peter Parker shows up there, they might cotton on as to who he really is. So he needs a new costume that will sort of obscure his identity a bit, which is interesting because it's kind of I'd say it's a reference to, but it's very similar to a story in the comics called Identity Crisis, where Spider-Man got framed for murder, so Peter made a bunch of new costumes, and they like had a bunch of new identities. They were Prodigy, Ricochet, Dusk, and Hornet. And now we can add to that list what Ned on the fly has to come up with to explain to Betty, the hero of Europe, Night Monkey.
The European Spider-Man knockoff. Yeah.
I love that it becomes a running gag where, like, even on the news, they refer to him as Night Monkey.
With the appropriate translations in all the different languages as well. Which, of course, irritates Peter a little bit when he sees it, because Night Monkey's getting all the credit.
Which, I mean, is kind of what you wanted, Peter.
Yeah. You just cat. Actually, I take back what I said at the top of the show. Maybe he's a whiny little so-and-so, like Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire before him. I'm not happy because this is happening, and now I'm not happy because it's not happening.
Yeah, but then he trips over and he misses himself and he goes, "Oh, you scamp."
I know.
So after that happens, Spider-Man goes to meet Mysterio in a bar, and he kind of decides he's too young for all this responsibility he's got. But Mysterio, I mean, heck, it's like the news reports say, that guy's like Tony Stark and Thor rolled into one. So he decides to hand over Edith to Mysterio because he'll be able to use it more responsibly.
And what could possibly go wrong with that? I mean, Quentin Beck, he's basically Stark 2.0, isn't he?
He is, for very good reason. And that reason is that this was all an elaborate hoax.
Dun, dun, dun!
And I just love the kind of sort of hustle style reveal as the kind of the holographic illusion of the bar falls away.
Yeah.
Reveal that Quentin Beck, disgruntled former employee of Tony Stark, and his team of special effects artists have created a whole con to get Edith because they feel like, no, they put in the work. They deserve to be the next Iron Man.
Yeah. And I hope this isn't a trend now, because they've done it in the last couple of movies with justifiable reasons where they've cut new stuff into old films. But it's been two movies on the bounce now that they've done it in. So I'm hoping they're not going to carry on doing that and finding excuses to crow about new footage into old scenes.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I've got to admit, I did like it in this film.
Yeah.
I thought it helped give it kind of a sense of continuity.
I just think if it's a trick that they pull too many times, it's going to get tired real quick.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I think this makes sense, especially with them all being former employees of Tony Stark. So we find out that Mysterio, he was a scientist called Quentin Beck. He made the holographical equipment that Tony Stark named Barth that we see at the beginning of Civil War when Tony's using it to talk to his parents. And then he's got a sidekick who, in an even deeper cut, is played by Peter Billingsley and is a returning role of that one scientist that Obadiah Stane yelled at in Iron Man 1. He's my favourite MCU character. That's a lie. It's actually that one S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who was playing Gallagher.
Okay. You'll find another favourite MCU character before long. You're fickle like that.
You're right. I'm sure. Maybe that one policeman who's also the guy from Dollhouse. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll take the crown. Anyway, speaking of taking the crown, so Mysterio wants to take the crown of the world's best superhero. Boom, seamless transition. But to be kind of the next Iron Man, he decides he needs to defeat an Avengers-level threat. And so he's going to use his illusions. And I like that they actually kind of they explain it a bit. They're all his illusions. He's got a bunch of drones with holographic projectors, and they've got kind of like little guns and gadgets on that can cause the damage. And I feel like that works as a better explanation for how he does his stuff than just, I don't know, it's holograms and robots and magic gas.
It's all smoke and mirrors, really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's something I wouldn't call it plausible, but it's just, it has its own kind of internal logic to it that I like.
Yeah.
So yeah, so basically he needs Edith so he can get the whole drone network to basically launch an attack on London in the guise of like a gigantic fused elemental that Mysterio can then stop at the last moment. You know, after a lot of lives have been lost, but still he'll save the day and we'll be, you know, everyone will love him. So as he's explaining that, we kind of cut to Spider-Man and MJ figuring that out. And so Spider-Man races to Berlin to stop him. And then I really like this bit as well, where kind of Mysterio and Spider-Man fight. And Mysterio, like, uses, because, like, properly kind of mind messing, putting the whammy on him with his illusions. So kind of, like, makes all the surroundings like, look like a school and look like MJ's falling off a building. And then kind of brings up a sort of zombie Tony Stark.
Yeah. It's all kind of Mysterio's greatest hits, really, isn't it?
Yeah, they do take a lot of inspiration from the comics. You know, there's a bit where he kind of turns into like a giant Mysterio that's a thing in one of the comics I've got today.
Yeah.
So yeah, Spider-Man tries to stop him, ends up getting hit by a train. Like, yeah, Parker just doesn't have a lot of luck with trains, does he?
No. No, trains are definitely not up there on his top five favourite transportation methods.
So anyway, he then ends up in the Netherlands, where he's picked up by Happy Hogan. And we get another fun bit I liked, where Peter ends up making himself a suit in kind of Tony Stark's jet, whilst Happy Hogan plays Back in Black.
Yep.
And I think that was good for kind of really reinforcing the idea that he is the next Iron Man.
But of course, there is also that little subplot with Happy that is distracting Spider-Man a little, I think.
Oh yeah, that Happy's maybe he's got a bit of a thing going on with Aunt May. Or Aunt Tomei.
Hey, I see what you did there.
I did. I bet no one's ever done that joke before. But yeah. But I also like that Spider-Man, he makes the suit himself. Like, it's not another thing that he just gets as a gift from Tony Stark.
Yeah.
So he gets that, and then he ends up having a big old fight in London.
And we've all been there, I think.
Yeah, it's like, I thought it was a good fight. Like, there was lots of fun stuff of him kind of webbing up drones and slingshotting himself off buildings.
Yeah.
But it did also feel like, yeah, this is like the end of a lot of Marvel movies where there's a big old thing that's going to destroy the city and there's lots of things flying about and the hero's going to stop them. There is a cool moment at the end, though, where Spider-Man's fighting Mysterio. Mysterio sicks all the drones on him. Spider-Man kind of punches them all about, but Mysterio ends up getting hit with a ricochet bullet. And as he's lying there, he kind of tells Peter that, you know, he's sorry and you were right. You're really the next Tony Stark. And kind of as he's reaching his arm out for one final handshake, Spider-Man just spins around and grabs, like, thin air as we hear a gunshot. And then it kind of fades away to reveal Mysterio was actually standing behind him with a gun. And I just thought that was a neat moment.
Yeah.
Also, I like the idea that, like, real Mysterio, he doesn't wear that big kind of green and fishbowly suit, because that's just an illusion. But he does have kind of like a sort of camo-style mocap suit.
Yeah.
And still a big ball helmet. So still kind of looks enough like the Mysterio costume. But yeah, that's Spider-Man Far From Home. Yeah, Pete saves the day, goes home, tells MJ how he feels. They start going out. Everything's good and nice and happy. Or is it? Dun, dun, dun. Surprise post-credit scene. So after a little bit of credits, we suddenly get... picking up right where the movie left off, Spider-Man's just, he's in, I think, Times Square, New York, and special news bulletin. Turns out Mysterio, before he died, doctored some footage to make it look like Spider-Man was the one controlling the drone strike, released it to the Daily Bugle. Isn't that a fun reference?
Absolutely.
And we get one of their head reporter who's going to show us the footage. Yeah, there's finally an MCU version of J. Jonah Jameson, and You know, I think it was an interesting casting choice, because really there was only one actor who could ever live up to J.K. Simmons in the role, and that's just to bloody well get J.K. Simmons back, which, I mean, that was... I wanted to applaud. So yeah, but that's not even the biggest plot twist, because also Mysterio reveals to the world Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And then we also got another post-credits scene, which is a weird one. Because it turns out that Nick Fury and Maria Hill were actually Talos the Skull and his wife, and the real Nick Fury is in space. Which I guess might be setting something up for the future.
I guess it must.
I mean, I guess it was a weird point to end on, but I think it did work kind of well with the whole theme of, you know, illusions and not being able to trust yourself.
Yeah.
Which is why I thought the other post-credits scene worked really well as well.
Yeah. And I've seen a lot of fan theories since seeing Far From Home that suggest that maybe that first post-credit sequence is setting it up for a more movie-based, proper identity crisis film.
Yeah, exactly. That is why I mentioned the storyline earlier.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe he has to do something to kind of... Maybe he takes on all these other identities to kind of discredit Mysterio somehow.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
You know, or maybe he'll just... Yeah. Or maybe in the next film, Spider-Man rings up the devil and says, hey, devil, can you maybe just do me a solid? Because that's the thing he apparently does sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, that's an actual plot line from Spider-Man comics.
Okay.
It's why Peter Parker and Mary Jane aren't married anymore.
Right. Okay. So, how many webs out of 10 shall we give it?
I would give... You know what? I would give it a solid, maybe like 7.5 webs out of 10.
Yeah.
But then that entire system is grabbed and chucked to the side and replaced by just one glorious J. Jonah Jameson mustache.
Okay. I'm intrigued by the concept of half a web. Is that the one that he fires just as the fluid in his web shooters runs out?
Yeah, exactly. The one that's just kind of a bit of a...
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I would, you know, I think an 8 would have been generous. But it is, it's a proper fun, big superhero blockbuster. This is it's the kind of movie that I expected when the cinematic universe first kicked off. It was how I expected all the movies to end up being. And they've kind of pleasantly surprised us, but I think it needed it, like I say, after the big event of Endgame and Infinity War.
Yeah, and I think, but that is conversely the thing that kind of stops it being like an 8 or a 9 is just, this is coming in the wake of Endgame. And it's just kind of a nice little palate cleanser.
Yeah. For whatever madness comes next.
Well, I know what madness is coming next here, and that's what we've been reading.
Absolutely. And we'll cover that after the break.
I'm Christopher Sabat, voice of Alex Louis Armstrong, the Strong Arm Alchemist. And you're listening to The Geek Show, which has been passed down the Armstrong line for a generation or two.
Ah, there really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literally Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literally Loitering.
And welcome back to the show, everyone. Now we're going to be talking about what we've been reading. Spoiler alert, it's a lot of Spider-Man. Mick, do you want to kick us off?
Okay, well, I've been reading Marvel Platinum, The Definitive Spider-Man Redux, written and drawn by Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, I don't know all the first names of these people. Lieber, Wolfman, Buscema, Pollard, Michelini, McFarlane, Mackey, Saviuk, David, Nauk, Spencer and Otley. And, oh my, it's a lot of Mysterio and Spider-Man. Oh my God, so much.
That's perhaps not surprising.
Ah, me. Man, and I'm glad I saw Far From Home before I'd read this comic. I mean, to be fair, I started reading this comic on the way to watch Far From Home. But if I'd have read this before watching Far From Home, I'd have gone, nah, I might have to go watch a film with Mysterio in. Because he's actually quite crap as a villain.
Oh, no, you're not a Mysterio fan.
He's a bit naff. His only motivation is, until it gets a bit weird, his only motivation is to be rich and famous, which he does by using his powers to... And in the first story, it's just he's being a strange superpowered villain, blaming Spider-Man for a series of crimes. So I guess that ties in with the movie. But he becomes J. Jonah Jameson's new hero. He becomes the hero to Spider-Man's villain in the Daily Bugle's eyes, which, of course, backfires tremendously on Peter Parker. On J. Jonah Jameson. The next one, he sets up a fake movie studio. His sole intention to set up a movie where Spider-Man and the Human Torch star in the movie and then battle each other to try and wipe each other out, because that'll make life easier for Mysterio. And they're all just really naff storylines. The one where it really becomes a good one is one where Mysterio runs a nursing home. And in that nursing home, it appears that Aunt May sadly passes away. But Peter Parker doesn't believe this and starts investigating, and he finds that in there, as an accomplice to Mysterio, is the very burglar who murdered Uncle Ben all those years ago.
Oh no, what a terrible twist that should definitely be taken at face value.
Well, actually, no, it turns out it is that person.
Oh.
But in this, Mysterio's a kind of backup villain. So it turns out that when that villain did get caught and sent down for the robberies and the murder of Ben, he spent some time in jail. And he spent time in jail as the cellmate of a Al Capone-style gangster. And I say Al Capone in that, basically, apart from the name Al Capone, his story is pretty much the same, in that he got rich through speakeasies during the Prohibition, and he buried all his money in a safe in the house inhabited later by May and Ben Parker. Turns out that that's what he was after. He'd overheard this gangster figure talking about these riches, and that's why he was burgling the house when Ben went to stop him and was shot by the burglar.
But wait, so he wanted to steal these untold riches from the Parker household?
That's right.
But not before he, like, stole the cash register from a wrestling show.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he wasn't fussy about what money he wanted. You know, just some cash, you know. I think the cash register from the wrestling show was basically just to make sure it covered his travel expenses to get to and from the Parker house.
Okay, that makes more sense, because I don't think a lot of criminals think, I'm going to do a big crime, so I better do some warm-up crimes first, so I don't pull a muscle.
It could have been that. It could have been, you know, like some of these big artists, when they've got a new album coming out, they'll do a couple of little warm-up gigs to just try out some new songs and maybe do an acoustic set. Maybe he was doing that. But anyway, the thing that gets me, this is quite an interesting story in that it's a revenge tale for Spider-Man. But Mysterio's a kind of sort of background figure in it, really, because the minute he finds out that the money wasn't there, he goes, oh, well, that was interesting. Bit of a diversion. Anyway, I'm off.
So see, that's the kind of thing I sort of love a bit about Mysterio. That he's just, He's clearly not that fussed about his villainy.
Obviously, it turns out that May's fine. But yeah, so the story's more about Peter Parker and this burglar than it's got anything to do with Mysterio. Mysterio uses some illusions to try and get May to talk. It turns out that the reason the money wasn't there was because it had been eaten by termites before Ben and May had even moved into the house. It was just an empty... They found the box and it was just empty.
Sure, but why not?
Why not? So there was that. And then there's another one where Mysterio turns up, sets some illusions loose with the entire aim of just making Peter Parker think he's killed someone as Spider-Man. And again, sort of ends up just getting bored, really, and it turning out to be not that good a story. They're all a bit thin, including the giant-sized 30th anniversary Web of Spider-Man story, where the agent that Peter Parker engaged with very early in his Spider-Man career turns up and starts working with him again. And again, this is a kind of Mysterio is clearly behind all these illusions, like, you know, Galactus being infected by Venom.
Okay.
That's right, Galactus being infected by Venom and killing all of the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, and any other group of superheroes you care to think of. But Spider-Man then takes him on before realizing that it's an illusion. And the agent, Max, has done it all because Mysterio gave him the illusion of his dead wife back. So he did it all for love.
Yeah.
It has to be said, a Venom Galactus is possibly one of the finest things I've ever seen drawn in comics.
Yeah, I guess that's the problem with a lot of just sort of generic Mysterio stories, is they just go, oh no, Spider-Man, how are you going to fight this scary thing? And then it's probably an illusion, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's it. And there's all sorts of... The thing is, I can get the fact that there's a villain who creates these illusions, and so Spider-Man's not sure what's real and what's not. It's all the convolution that you then have to throw in. Why isn't Spider-Man's spidey sense tingling? Oh, because he's got this transmitter that interferes with it. Right. Why isn't Spider-Man's reflexes doing? Oh, this gas has got some kind of depressant in it. Well, that's convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what I mean about, like, how it's nice that movie Mysterio is just very... He's got drones, they do holograms, they've got some gadgets, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's not just this kind of school playground. Yeah, well, I've got a bulletproof vest. I've got special anti-bulletproof vest bullets.
Yeah, so I found this one really depressing in terms of what a two-dimensional villain who's hardly ever present at his own crimes, Mysterio is. And then I got to the run from Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, which starts in issue 11, where Peter Parker is a teacher at Empire State Uni. And unfortunately, it's been revealed in some previous storyline that he is Spider-Man. The parents are getting outraged because villains keep attacking the school because that's where Spider-Man works, and therefore putting their kids in danger. And Mysterio turns up, and Flash teams up with Parker. Flash is the school coach.
Yeah, that's Flash Thompson, isn't it?
Yeah. Not The Flash, it's not a DC crossover. And there are Mysterios. Misties? We said Misties, didn't we?
We did say Misties.
There are at least two, possibly three. It's not clear. It's a very confusing story. There is at least two Misties in this. One is claiming to be the deceased, i.e. shot himself in the head, Quentin Beck. And the other one is someone called, I think it's Francis Clum.
Yeah, he was, at the time, kind of the newest guy to take over as Mysterio.
But what confuses me is that he keeps referring to himself, he keeps referring to the other Mysterio as his brother. And they're fighting each other for the right to be the real Mysterio. We then introduce a character called Arrow, who Mysterio claims is working for some higher power. Arrow appears to be able to shoot twigs out of her arms. She's attracted to Flash. Spider-Man's got a suit that defeats all the countermeasures that Mysterio's got. They rescue the kids from the school. They dissipate the mist. And it's a really interesting story. There's a lot goes on. It's a lot more solid. It's got a lot more meat to it than all the other Mysterio stories in this collection. And then at the end, it just sort of, like, fizzles out to sort of Flash gets the girl, the kids are safe, and there's no real closure to the Mysterio bit. There's a hint that he's working for some darker power, but other than that, nothing. And then the other one, the final story in the collection, is one that I've read before, which is a bit wet, which is it's a Mysterio story where Peter Parker is at Empire State Uni as a lecturer and the former head of Parker Industries, and Mysterio creates a sort of alternative reality where he gets found out as having plagiarized one of his papers back in his high school days. Gets given the key to the city by Mayor Kingpin and stuff like that. But obviously he's discredited, and therefore all his respect and admiration that he gets from his peers, his job at the Bugle, etc., etc., it all gets taken away. And even May turns her back on him because he's a fraud. So it's basically just Mysterio just turns Peter Parker's life to crap. And that's his whole plot, to destroy Spider-Man that way. I've read it before. It was a bit of a meh story then. To be honest, Jake Gyllenhaal, by far the finest Mysterio, as far as I'm concerned. So that was Redux, and I wouldn't even give it a little drip of snot from J. Jonah Jameson's nose dripping down on a particularly cold day in New York onto the J. Jonah Jameson moustache that you used as a rating system earlier.
Oh no, is this like officially the new rating system then?
I hope not, because it's really difficult to think of any, because the problem with a moustache is it tends to be a unit of one. So therefore, something really good has to be one, and something really rubbish is quite a binary system.
Oh, we'll figure it out.
And if you try and do it in percentages, at some point, a middling comic's going to make J. Jonas Jameson look like Hitler.
Look, okay, there's a few kinks that need to be ironed out, I'll admit, but I think we're getting there.
Can we not go back to Nightwing Butts? We knew where we stood with Nightwing Butts. You can always rely on a Nightwing Butt.
Fine, Nightwing Butts are slowly reversing back into the room.
So what have you got?
Well, I think I've got an apology, Mick. Because clearly what's happened is I've accidentally taken all the good Mysterio stories.
Yeah, well, the thing that gets me with this Spider-Man Redux volume is that, yes, there is. Actually, no. There is no... Oh, yes, there is. There's a sort of vague... Oh, is that Mysterio or is that Kingpin in the background? There's not really a reference to Mysterio on the front page, on the front cover. There's what could be Hobgoblin. There's Vulture. There's kind of a sort of who's who of Spidey enemies and Spider-Man himself.
Yeah, I feel like...
But if you...
That's kind of been a running theme with the sort of Platinum ones we've done, is they feel the need to try and like trick you into not realising it's tying into a movie.
Yeah.
Which is just a bit odd.
Yeah, on the back, even on the back, it doesn't sort of say this is a book full of Mysterio. It was three Mysterios, three Misties in that one story. But yeah, it's only when you read the back. Oh, and the Wingless Wizard.
Yes.
You know, as opposed to all those other wizards with wings. Even Mysterio just refers to him as Wizard. I don't know whether he does that just to wind him up.
Which presumably is the method by which he flies, since he doesn't have wings.
Well, you see, this is what confused me, because I was unaware of the Wingless Wizard before. But in this story, he doesn't actually fly.
He is a Fantastic Four villain, his main thing. He's got, like, anti-gravity discs.
Right. This isn't really made clear in this comic. And, you know, to someone who's... You know, I mean, as a kid, I used to read Spider-Man, and it was all Green Goblin, Hobgoblin, those kind of villains, Vulture.
But very heavily Goblin-focused, then.
Well, you know, to be fair, he's got a high percentage of Halloween-themed rogues as Spider-Man, hasn't he?
Oh, in which case, that is definitely... We're moving on to mine. Is that the perfect segue? Because this is a book that... Well, I'm reading Spider-Man versus Mysterio.
You see, at least that gives it away.
Yeah, but also features guest appearances from the Green Goblin and Jack-O-Lantern.
Ah...
So this is, basically this is like the same thing as yours. It's a collection of Mysterio stories. So collectively, this was written by Tom DeFalco, Stan Lee, Dan Slott, and Fred Van Lente, with art by Don Heck, Barry Kitson, Marcus Martin, Javier Pulido, John Romita Sr., and Lee Weeks, and inks by Mike Esposito, Barry Kitson, Marcus Martin, Javier Pulido, Bob McLeod, and Jim Mooney. So, first of all, this one collects Gauntlet Origins Mysterio from Web of Spider-Man issue 4. And this is, well, I feel like calling it an origin story is a bit of a misnomer. Mysterio's origin is basically two panels of, was a special effects guy, got fired, became supervillain.
Because that's what you do.
Yeah, that's pretty much all Mysterio is, isn't it? But it is actually, it's a fun little story. It's basically Mysterio before his first appearance, the one you read, where he frames Spider-Man for some crimes by impersonating him. And so he goes to visit his old mentor, a man named Ray Bradhouse, who was kind of the best in the biz at special effects. Do you like what they did, Mick?
I do like what they've done there.
So yeah, basically Mysterio, he wants to figure out the secret of how Ray, in one of his films, made a sort of demon creature that seemed to climb up the walls, because obviously he wants to emulate that for Spider-Man. So he goes, tries to steal the secret, ends up running afoul of some kind of mechanical demon thing, and runs off on his big spring shoes, only for the Twilight Zone twist at the end. Yeah, it turns out Ray for that movie just used an actual demon because he's friends with Doctor Strange.
Okay.
So that's a fit, like I said, it's very kind of sort of Twilight Zone-y Tales of the Unexpected. I enjoyed that. Then we had Amazing Spider-Man issues 66 and 67, which are The Madness of Mysterio and To Squash a Spider, which is, yeah, they're just some classic kind of Stan Lee, John Romita Sr. Spider-Man comics. And I really enjoyed these ones because they are, like, properly for me what Spider-Man should be. So, like, you know, Peter Parker, he's down on his luck, he's got no money, Gwen Stacy won't talk to him, the Green Goblin's up running around somewhere, no one knows where he is. He's got what might be one of the most Spider-Man lines I've ever read, which is, "Boy, my biggest problem is what to worry about first." And thrown into the mix is, see, I mean, it's the kind of thing you probably wouldn't like, but I just love the lovably bonkers plot of Mysterio captures, well, kind of tells Spider-Man to come fight him in his warehouse, zaps him with a ray gun, only for Spider-Man to wake up seemingly inside the model fairground that Mysterio had in his office, shrunk down to the size of an actual spider. But don't worry, it's just that Mysterio doing one of his wacky illusions. And I just love the kind of the end twist of, no, Spider-Man being shrunk down with a ray is ridiculous. It's the much more plausible, Mysterio knocked him unconscious, dragged him to an actual theme park, and made a bunch of holograms of himself as like a 60-foot Mysterio, which is just ridiculous, and I love it. Then we get... the miniseries Spider-Man and Mysterio issues 1-3, which has some amazing titles. It's Mysterio Manifesto Chapter 1, in which certain beliefs are called into question. Outside brackets, Jack's back. Mysterio Manifesto Chapter 2, brackets, in which truths are revealed and lies are told. Close brackets, even the dead can lie. And the Mysterio Manifesto Chapter 3, brackets, in which a secret is finally revealed. Close brackets, false truths.
Ooh.
Anyway, this is around the time that Mysterio kind of got a bit weird. So it's just after he seemingly killed himself. But then he reappears to trap Spider-Man and Daredevil in virtual reality worlds.
Ooh.
With the help of his pal Jack-O-Lantern. That's very twisty-turny. It's kind of a lot of you don't know who Mysterio is and kind of who Jack-O-Lantern is.
Okay.
And yeah, it's fun. It's lots of twisty-turny plots. And it's Spider-Man and Daredevil. They're always a fun team. Because you've got Spider-Man as the kind of wisecracking jokester and Daredevil as his more dry-witted straight man.
Right.
Oh, there's a great bit where they whip off Mysterio's helmet to reveal it's J. Jonah Jameson. Which it isn't. It isn't actually, but that's a fun little misdirect.
Yeah.
And then finally we have Amazing Spider-Man issues 618 to 620. Which is Mysterioso parts 1-3. And this one was a lot of fun. Because it's actually about the Magia, or Magia, I think they're called.
Yeah.
You know, the Marvel Comics crime syndicate who definitely aren't related to any kind of real world crime institution.
Yeah. The Marvel equivalent of the Falcones.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about them, and how they've seemingly been wiped out, only to reveal they've kind of hide in Mysterio to use his illusions to fake their own deaths as part of a big kind of scheme to get scheme with their money laundering, only for Mysterio to like double cross them and try and make off with the money himself, and Spider-Man gets dragged into all of that. But yeah, I think it's the kind of Mysterio story that works because it's not just, oh, look at me, Spider-Man, now you've got to face my illusions. Oh no, you faced my illusion. Now you punched me in the face. The end. Although there is a bit where Mysterioso, a bit of unintended comedy, is part of what Mysterio tries to do is make Spider-Man think he's killed someone.
Ooh.
So the first time it makes it look like he's punched a guy too hard and knocked him off a railing, so he's broken his neck.
This seems to be a constant theme. This trying to make Spider-Man feel bad about killing someone.
Yeah. And I feel like making Spider-Man feel guilty about killing a guy once is dramatic. Then making Spider-Man feel like he accidentally caused an entire group of gangsters to shoot each other starts to push it into the realms of like slapstick comedy.
Yeah.
I would absolutely read Spider-Man accidentally keeps killing people, the series.
It could be a rival to the Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. Spider-Man apparently kills everybody.
By accident.
Yeah.
Just like pushes the Rhino off a building, but then he falls on Captain America. But yeah, it's a collection of really good Spider-Man stories. The writing's great. They're all really fun. The art's fantastic. Like especially, kind of the classic John Romita Sr. Spider-Man. And Marcos Martin as well, he does a really good job kind of doing a bit more stylistic stuff for the final story, but gives it kind of a sort of an old kind of 40s and 50s noir-esque look to it. It's just, really adds to the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So I guess basically read mine instead of Mix. It's like, oh, that's right. I realised the whole point of why we dropped Nightwing, but it's because you can really only give it, like, a whole or half a butt.
That's better than a moustache, though.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's a whole Nightwing butt.
Whereas mine's... Well, I guess you could have half a butt if you're a fan of Mysterio and really thin plotting.
But it's a sad, sad, thin slab of back meat. Not like the plump, juicy rear of Spider-Man versus Mysterio.
Indeed. Right. I think that's a wrap.
I think it is. So, yeah, if you like what you've heard, you can find more of us online. We are part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. You can find us at iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, Acast, just your podcast catcher of choice. You can also follow us on the socials. We've got Facebook and Twitter. Why not tell us your thoughts on Far From Home and maybe some of your favourite Mysterio stories. But apart from that, that's it for us this week. I've been Andrew.
I've been Mick.
So long and thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.